The day has arrived where Countryside Live 2015 is in full force and already like a whirling dervish. Our press officer extraordinaire, Judy Thompson, is in the house. How are you, Judy?
Good morning, Alex. I'm fine, thanks.
Good. Now, obviously, special time. It's always a special time with respect to Countryside Live at the Yorkshire Harrogate Showground. But this time round, a new show director.
Absolutely. We have Charles Mills as our new show director, but Charles has been involved with the Yorkshire Agricultural Society for many years, so he's not an unfamiliar face by any means.
Well, he certainly made his debut extraordinarily well with respect to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition a couple of weeks ago, and we're delighted to say, just a couple of steps away now, we have the legend that is Charles Mills. How are you, Charles?
Morning, Alex. Certainly not a legend, but
it'll get there. It'll happen, I'm sure. I mean, already the campaign is working on actually getting a knighthood for Bill, and I think, you know, we'll get one for yourself as well, really. So it'll all work there.
Steady. That's all I'll say on that.
Charles, this is your first official Countryside Live as show director. Already we're seeing lots of sort of excitement that's actually around here. And, of course, you know, to commemorate that, you're also building a whole new hall.
We are exciting times ahead for the whole year, and when the hall's built, we'll have a new garden show as well, which is usually exciting corn. It's going to be great.
As we look around, clearly we've got equine activities, we've got one man and his pig, we've got all sorts of other wonderful things from that point of view. What are you most looking forward to over the next couple of days?
It's difficult for me not to say about cattle. I was the chief cattle steward for Countryside Live. They will always have a favourite part in my heart here. But everything is a favourite. You can't pick one thing over another. The new temporary building we've got is going to be full of some wonderful events too. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it all.
We're going to be joined shortly by some of our colleagues from Lincoln, Sue Rice, Dylan Rice and indeed young Bridget Rice are coming along, together with Jessica Ward. Jessica's dual nationality, New Zealand and Isle of Man, and of course British from that point of view. But what sort of things would you say? I mean, basically, it's a family, so it's a family package. That's something that always strikes me about Countryside Live, that there are lots of family events for education across the generations.
Yes, that's absolutely right. It is probably aimed at families, really, although the little sister of the GYS... But we do look forward to everybody coming. There's something here for everyone.
Indeed. And as we sort of look through the actual showground itself, any challenges with respect to arranging things? Because obviously with it being a building site, there's always that sort of notion that, right, where do we go here? I mean, I thought the signage was excellent, but was that something obviously you had to think about in terms of how things were sort of mapping out for the showground?
Well, signage was an issue, but it's great to see something going on so people can actually see the development is moving well ahead. That's great.
You're ideally placed to answer a question that's always perturbed some of my colleagues, which is, why is it in the cattle areas do the stewards wear bowler hats? They're not in the city in London. What's the bowler hat phenomenon all about?
Well, bowler hats aren't worn at Countryside Live, so...
Exactly, but that's what I thought. I'm prepping ahead for the Great Yorkshire Show. I thought I just want to sort of sort out, why the bowler hat?
Well, bowler hats for the Great Yorkshire Show worn by all stewards, not just cattle stewards. It's right across the board, and that's something I've obviously got to wear as well. Don't wear one very well. Quite a challenge for me is a bowler hat, but anyway.
I don't know. I think Charles Mills, John Steed, Charles Mills. It's a step to all sorts of things there.
As I've said before, steady.
Okay, again, fabulous stuff from that perspective. It's going to be a fabulous 2 days in terms of the event, but obviously we are looking ahead to next year's Countryside Live and, of course, next year's Great Yorkshire Show. So quick plug for the dates for the 2016 Great Yorkshire Show. As Judy sort of, as ever, you know, in full force, we've got...
12th to the 14th of July, I'm reliably informed.
You see, that's the kind of right-hand person that actually Judy Thompson will do on a regular basis, and it's why, literally, the Yorkshire Agricultural Society is blessed to have her on the team.
Well, Judy and the rest of the team, that was one of my main reasons for taking the job.
Well, great news, because the rest of the team have arrived, led, of course, by Jessica Ward. Jessica, good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Jessica goes multitasking with respect to having a stirring stick and sorting out refreshments for Bridget as well, whilst I move around in all sorts of ways. Jessica, your first thoughts, because it's your first time at the Yorkshire Harrogate Showground.
It is. I'm liking it already. As soon as I walked in, it looks very professional. I saw some donkeys on the way up, so I'm very excited to go and speak to the owners there. And some horses out there as well. It's very, very lovely. And I'll be accompanied by Bridget, so that's also wonderful.
Hello, Bridget.
Hello.
What are you looking forward to today, Bridget?
Seeing the horses, because I like horses, but my mum won't let me have one.
It's always the way with parents in many ways. We're also going to be checking out Ben Potter with his owls, I think, in a few seconds. Sue Rice and Dylan Rice, of course, with us. And a quick reminder, you're listening to Southside Broadcasting and the Midweek Drive on location in association with farmernord.co.uk at Countryside Live 2015. Already the excitement is mounting because as we stand outside the Pony Ring here in Show Hall 2, I believe, because obviously Show Hall 1 is no more, Dylan is having challenges with his dumping scenario. But Dylan, what are your first thoughts on standing on the red carpet here at Countryside Live?
Well, actually, it's a lot different to when we came to the Great Yorkshire Show. That's the first impression, I think. And it's always difficult when you come to these things. You think, yeah, where am I in relation to where I was before? We've seen where the logging was, where they were climbing the big poles and think, oh, yes, I recognise that bit. But I have no idea where I am compared to it. I think this is where the cheeses were. Mm-hmm. It's a lot different as far as the atmosphere as well. It was very busy at the Great Yorkshire Show. This is a lot calmer. I feel that I can get around and see a lot more things, which will be really nice to have a talk to people rather than the hustle and bustle and everybody's really busy. You get the impression here that, you know, people are going to have a chance to talk to you and are going to have the time as well. So I'm really looking forward to it.
You need to obviously mention the fact that there is a Twitter hashtag as far as the event is actually concerned, and it's hashtag Countryside Live with a capital C, a capital L. I'm just sharing, Sue, the notion that there is a Twitter account here. You can sort of tag it in at hashtag Countryside Live.
Wonderful. Well, in which case I shall be making sure that I put things on there all day.
Exactly. Judy will be delighted with respect to that. And I see that obviously Bridget is now in charge of your stick.
She is, but not for much longer.
Sense. As well as that, of course, multitasking. Jess Ward Photography is at work, so already Jess getting some nice sort of shapes and images and impressions of the show.
Yes, I'm trying to take some fancy shots of our surroundings, and hopefully we'll get some really nice shots and give them to you.
Well, let's go and sort out Ben Potter then, and see what owl things he's actually got, and then we'll sort of continue our little promenade, an audio promenade, of course, with the Countryside Live 2015 event. There are certain absolutes when it comes to Countryside Live, and when it comes to the quality of exhibitors, when it comes to owls, there's only one name you can come to. It's Ben Potter. Ben, how are you?
Hey, good morning, thank you. Yeah, all right.
How's it been over the last year? I mean, before I actually introduce you to the team here, already fascinated with all sorts of things, etc. What have you been doing over the last 12 months?
Yeah, we've done this year a fantastic year, which has been really, really good for ourselves. Done about 93 days at events with the Eagle and Vulture team that we've got. But as the year draws to a close, we stop flying those at the end of September and give them a break in the winter, with us having like quite a few exotics and some real special stuff. They need a bit of time off, you know.
So otherwise the unions get into play. You get the union of birds of prey and they'll go on strike. It'd be very messy.
That's it, yeah. So everything earns its break, really, you know. And myself and Rebecca as well, you know, we're ready for a bit of a steadier time. So this one draws it to an end for us. So we use, I use quite an unusual mixture of birds. I've got the three owls on the front row there that Rebecca flies and works at home, and we do the wildlife and photography work with. And then the five birds behind, they're all commercial. We use the two Irish hawks for like seagull and starling scaling work. And the three falcons are also used for that too, yeah.
You mentioned obviously Rebecca. I can't recall actually. You having a glamorous female assistant before? Is this a new take for Ben Potter Birds of Prey?
Oh, I've had my glamorous assistant for nearly 2 years now. But usually you tend to see me with the eagles and vulture in the show, and I have Rebecca always at the background helping. But yeah, the company's grown now, and we're busier than ever, really, you know, and it requires two people. You know, the thing is, if we ever have a bird, unfortunately, you do go off site, and it's very rare, three times in the 90 shows. But you need to continue. You have to have somebody be able to go and take care of that while you keep the event going. You can't stop, can you? So, yeah, it requires two of us.
Exactly. Let's bring in Jessica here. She's currently sort of Dylan. I beckon you over here from that point. Dylan, as we already see that our three ladies have become enraptured with photographs and images already. Sue is busily hashtagging away. Questions for the man behind this, Ben Potter.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the different the kinds of raptors. Is that what you?
Yeah,
call
yeah, that's right.
Them?
Yeah,
yeah. Are they tame? In that sort of sense,
or you get anyone, don't you?
Yeah,
a small holding.
Yeah, so could you go up and pick them up and they wouldn't bite? Is that I'm thinking of the children more than anything.
Right. What it basically is, there's no domestication with birds of prey. So there are two real simple ways of getting it on track, for want of a better term. You can handle it down excessively and tame the bird, which you call manning it, basically, which is where you spend a vast amount of time with it and condition it to you and what you do, or you can hand rear it. But probably hand rearing it can create quite a noisy individual. Yeah, and that's not always great when something's just shouting and screaming at you all day long. So we mix and match according to certain temperaments. So, for example, the method of training a Labrador might be slightly different to training a Spaniel, and the same thing for training maybe a Peregrine or a Hawk, yeah? So with them, yeah, they're basically conditioned and tame enough for myself and Rebecca to do what we need to do with them. I've never, ever been into the poke and stroke thing. I don't like it. I think everything...
You don't use that with students at the University of Lincoln either, actually. It's often suggested, try the poke and stroke, but it's not going to work.
But what it basically is, everything deserves its bit of privacy and its space, but everything has a living to do, you know, and we have to make a living to keep the company working. So the eagles and vultures did a flying display to generate an income, and that goes back into the breeding project we're setting up at home, the conservation project. And the owls, falcons and hawks, they do all the wildlife work and the commercial stuff, and the tameness that they're at now is enough for me. And there are some there that I could pick up and sit happily on a child's hand, they'd be fine, and there are some there that their world would end by coming towards a child. But it will then fly at an industrial estate, at a landfill site, at an airport without a second thought. And that's what I need. I need a bird that'll work proactively and not be with people, you know, but tolerate them enough to deal with them, yeah?
It's quite an ancient craft, really, working with birds like these. Which of these would have been used, say, in medieval times, and which are something that you just have because people are interested to look at them?
Well, it dates back, you know, over 4,000 years, falconry now, and obviously it's like Far Eastern origins originally. And it's the second oldest form in the world of hunting with an animal after dogs. So it was always classed like the sport of kings and the wealthy, because it wouldn't produce volumes of food. It was more for the sporting and aesthetics that you would do it, you see, you know? So things like peregrines, goshawks, golden eagles, merlins, sparrowhawks were the ones that were really, you know, in the UK, really famed for, you know, for just being, they were there for us to get access to and been incredibly good in the field for working. Gerfalcons, you know, as you venture further afield, and there's many more that apply to that, but the most iconic one, I suppose, is the golden eagle, you know, a goshawk, and then maybe a peregrine falcon, really, yeah.
I did see a piece on the news about hunting in Mongolia, I think it was, where they were working with golden eagles,
yeah,
saying that it's a real dying art, lack of prey and, many reasons, really, but it was something in other parts of the world which seems to be dying out in this country. It's moved on to something like you're doing, which is more of a demonstration sport.
Yeah, with Mongolia, it's a fantastic thing. What they're basically doing out in Mongolia was the birds they're using there are an unusual type of golden eagle. It's about 37 different strains of golden eagle, and that's one of the largest in the world, called the bearcut, and it's like a colossal size thing. And they're using for hunting what we call a pelt wolf and red fox, because there was no other way of catching that animal, which was the only animal you could make a garment out of to keep you warm in such a cold country, you know. There's no trees, the ground is frozen. So they basically would get a young eagle, train it, and after 7 years, release it again. Because they get a little bit mature and a bit hormonal, a bit difficult to deal with, so they would let them go and start again, you see. But it's dying out because cultures change and society moves on, and not everyone's mad keen on that, you know. And these people aren't having to do that to survive anymore now, you know. When you see the modern day footage of that now, there's usually a man who's got a pair of tracky bottoms on his horse, you know? It's the same thing, but it's a modern take.
Oh, you are. Jessica?
Oh, I was just talking about golden eagles. My dad was showing me a documentary, and they were going and attacking goats off the cliffs. They were picking them up and throwing them to their deaths, and it was just incredible. I mean, it's pretty gory, but just amazing. But I was just wondering, there's things like owl cafes and that being introduced into London. I was just wondering what your opinion is of that.
Well, it's massive in Japan as well, is that? And initially you think it's horrific, because I don't like that type of thing, you know. I never have been. Tigers on chains and, you know, bear cubs and things like that. I don't like it all. But with the owl cafe thing, it's very strictly operated in Japan, where you can't take hot beverages into the cafe, you have to have a bottle of water, there's two handlers per person, you can't maul the owl. And if there's a conservation aim behind it and the money generated from that is going back to do some good, then fair enough. Because there has to be some sort of link to the public, and that, you know, if everyone had a chance to go meet a black rhino, a white rhino and elephants, you tend to sympathise with the cause, don't you? But if you don't know about this, so if it links to it, then yes. But if it's just for want of a better term, poke and stroke and alpha 5 quid, I'm not into that. That's not for me.
Yeah, I can see that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Ben, we said this last year, and I think we need to make 2016 the year when we do visit you at your owl and birds of prey sanctuary. Again, superb touching base with a good self. Any particular stars we should be looking out for this year?
Well, it's the last of the season for us in this gang of birds here. It's, I mean, they are very, very good. And if I can get them all to behave themselves and not be too adventurous today, the best one, I think, to watch, especially with it being a cool, real breezy day, I've got a little hybrid peregrine there called Billy. And he's on spectacular form at the moment, really. And he should be. Last year we flew him in, he was brilliant. And at the moment, he's probably fitter than last year, too, yeah.
We've momentarily left the Royce family. Oh, Sue's coming in to join us, and they're all coming in from basket weaving to a gentleman who I must admit I was drawn to because of the sheer quality of this particular sort of sculpture that we've got here. Sir, your name?
My name's Michael Weston.
Michael, you're here with the British Wood Carving Association, of course, which is the Yorkshire region incorporating Wooldale wood carvers. Share with us what you're doing with this wonderful sculpture in front of us.
Well, it's a concept of a golfer that's frustrated. He's missed his putt and he's pulling away at his flat cap in his teeth, right?
I feel the same thing. I've got the flat cap. Sometimes you think, where's it going?
Yep, so he's going to be stood on a big 18-inch golf ball, and I'm going to call him Attitude.
Nice. Sue, got the Attitude?
Absolutely. I mean, the different arrays of colours and the detailing that is on the table here before us, there's carvings of horses, of miners, it's all sorts of beautiful. What's your favourite wood to work in?
The favourite wood for wood carvers is lime. It takes a lot of detail. And it's very soft to carve, even though it's classed as a deciduous hardwood. Yep.
And how long does it take you? How long did it take you to get to this standard of work? Because the detailing in some of this work is beautiful.
It all depends how long you practice the wood carving. The more you do, the easier it becomes. But a piece, something like this, will take about 200 hours to complete.
So it's just over a week and a half then, basically, so you can knock them off quite regularly.
Time, yes, yes.
Jess?
I think it's amazing. I'm really loving this frustrated golfer here. The detail, like Sue said, is just amazing. I'm just wondering, looking around, I've not actually seen a lot of wood carvers kind of, like, create these creations. What's inspired you to, like, create miners and shields? Why these specific things?
Difficult to say, really. It's for the golfer. I always try to do something that makes it difficult for me, and that's the main thing. Or I usually choose something that's a bit of fun, like the attitude, how the attitude comes in.
Yeah. You do a radio presenter.
Pardon?
A radio presenter.
I'll try a radio presenter next. Yes, yes, yes.
Alex, yes. Be your model. Steady on, Jess. In terms of the actual system itself, if people, something like Jess or myself, were interested in actually starting, is there a class? Should you join the British Wood Carving Association?
Well, you can join the Wood Carvers Association. Yeah, for £20 a year, and you can come along to your local club, and they will show you how to do it. Yep.
Sounds phenomenal. Jess, any other questions about this?
Yeah, how long did it take you to kind of get into carving and being a carpenter?
Well, I've always been doing things in wood since I've been 17. And this just appealed to me. And, you go along to the BWA and they'll show you a piece of wood and how to carve it. It can take... anything from 6 months to a year before you can start to carve something that will look like you want it to look like.
Well, that, of course, is the point, because are there ever any moments where you're just getting the fine-tuning sorted out and then you think, oh, no, I've just chopped his arm off?
There can be that problem, yes, yes. Usually add a little bit of artistic license then, yes.
A one-armed frustrated golfer.
Yes.
Yes. It's been fantastic touching base with yourself. Quick name check for your other colleague who's busily working on the lathe at present.
Well, over there there's John, he's an ex-miner, so this is where the miners comes in. And then Bob over there, Bob Russon, he's an ex-joiner, and he does a lot of wood carvings, which you can see over there.
Absolutely, great. So a genuine delight touching base with yourself. Have you been to Countryside Life before?
Yes, been for about 3 years now.
Well, yep. Clearly this new location has benefited because we've at least managed to track you down, which is excellent stuff.
Yeah, yeah, this is a good venue. There's lots of light for wood carvers and the like of wood turners. Yeah.